from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, California has close to 2 million children living in poverty. Almost one-third of African-American children and one-third of Latino children grow up in poverty. California Governor Gavin Newsom's budget prioritizes the fight against child poverty, including a proposal to more than double the size of the state's current tax break for low-income workers. We'll hear about the governor's plan to reduce child poverty, and we'll discuss the scope of the problem and talk with experts about what works to reduce poverty. It's all coming up after the news. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Governor Gavin Newsom says child poverty in California is a moral outrage. The state has the highest rate of child poverty in the nation, with one in five kids affected. We're going to hear why a state as wealthy as California has so many children living in poverty and how Governor Newsom plans to mitigate the issue. Joining us first is California Assemblywoman Autumn Burke. She authored legislation that was Assembly Bill 1520, which created the, quote, Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force. And Assemblywoman, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, these statistics and these numbers are not only a moral outrage, they're appalling and they're shocking. The highest rate, as I said, in the United States, close to 2 million and almost a third of the African-American population and about a third of the Latino population. And you've been, I know, working hard, not only with the Assembly Bill 1520, which I referenced, but also with the task force. Where are we and how does your work connect to what Governor Newsom is trying to set forward here?
So I was fortunate enough to work with the governor before he was governor, when he was lieutenant governor. And as we were working on 1520, he took the time to actually read the Stanford study that was the inspiration for AB 1520, which is a holistic look at poverty. It's a change in the way government works. We're looking at the whole human, not just homelessness or not just health care or not just education, but how a person actually moves through life and how we change the trajectory of poverty in the state of California.
When you talk about a holistic look, though, does that mean you don't silo these? Because many people feel that the real causes, and we're talking, by the way, about half of the children in California living in poverty having at least one undocumented parent. And if you figure in cost of living, it's nearly about a half of the children in the state are at that level of poverty. Given those facts, can you move the needle holistically as opposed to saying we have to emphasize education and we have to emphasize housing?
Yeah, I mean, I do think you have to. You know, we're at a day and an age where we understand that, you know, the success of a person is not just about health or housing. It is about all of those things. And so following someone through their life, whether it is prenatal care from before they were born to when they were born, having in-home visits to help parents start off on the right foot, to making sure those children are properly have the proper nutrition because a malnourished child cannot learn, and then making sure their early childhood education is there and that their parents have the finances to make sure that not only does the state provide early childhood care, but that also they have the wherewithal to continue that education. And then all the way into workforce, making sure that there is just transition, that a young person, right now we have almost 70% of students who enter into a high school never see a four-year university or a community college, and making sure that that 70% of students have career opportunities, and those are available. We have, in 2025, we have over 1 million jobs that will be available in the state of California that will pay over $50,000 a year, and we have to make sure that our constituents are educated for those jobs.
So the notion is that if you look at this holistically and you pretty much try to confront the problem holistically, you can move the needle here. And how does Governor Newsom's, I mean, his plan actually talks about income support and tax credit. How does that figure in?
You know, it is all part of actually the Poverty Task Force plan. What they did is we've decided to look at deep child poverty first. And we saw that within 4 years, we could lift the kids that are in deep top poverty out of it, which is 6% of the children. That's 440,000 children who are living on less than $13,000 a year with a family of four. And with some of these, like I'm doing a target child tax credit, with some of these incentives that the governor is talking about, these are all part of the task force report that says that to lift these families out of deep poverty, it is possible, and he has done a budget that is the beginning of what that looks like.
Aren't we talking, though, about a necessity of billions of dollars? I mean, just as a lot of the estimates have gone?
We are. We are talking about billions of dollars. But as the fifth largest economy in the world, and as you stated, to have so many of our children living in poverty is not just morally reprehensible, but it's also fundamentally a break in the system. We can't keep touting that we're in a great financial place when GDP is up, unemployment is down, and we have so many children living in poverty.
We're talking with Assemblywoman Autumn Burke. She authored legislation, Assembly Bill 1520, which created the Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force. Can I ask how CalWORKs grants fits into the picture, Assemblywoman?
For us, it's all part of the package. I don't think there's any one piece that is going to solve the problem, but we are looking at a comprehensive set of budget asks and bills that we have over 10 different assembly members and senators carrying that all work together to lift families out of poverty.
Assemblywoman, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your being with us on Forum. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Assemblywoman Autumn Burke, California Assemblywoman from Inglewood. We have in studio Ted Lempert, who's president of Children Now. They're a national research and advocacy organization. They're based here in Oakland. Welcome, Ted.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you. Caroline Danielson's also here in studio. She's senior research fellow with the PPIC, the Public Policy Institute of California, and co-author of the yearly California Poverty Measure Report. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Caroline, I'm going to begin with you. Give us a picture, if you can, of children who live in poverty. I mean, give it to us maybe even as graphic and as detailed as you can.
Okay. So I would say that California definitely has a child poverty problem. As the assembly member mentioned, we have the highest child poverty or at least one of the highest child poverty rates in the country. So in the latest numbers we have from the census, California is sort of in the range of Louisiana and Arizona in terms of a child poverty rate and about one in five children. This is in part a problem that we have ourselves, and I would point to high housing costs as a good reason for that. It's in part a problem we share with the U.S. as a whole. We have a relatively high child poverty rate as a nation relative to other developed democracies. And so it's a state problem, but it's also a federal problem. And children in poverty in California face challenges not because we have a particularly weak social safety net in terms of other states, but because we faced high housing costs. Our housing costs are on average about 30% higher than for in terms of drawing a poverty line than they are in the rest of the nation as a whole. And that really puts a particular burden on the state.
Which is why I asked about sort of separating housing and education because they do loom so much into this whole picture. But Ted, let me go to you on the same question about a picture of poverty, of children who, I mean, a lot of these children are just not even eating. They don't have any opportunities for education. I mean, we're talking about really, I think James Baldwin years ago put it best, low ceilings that they hit their heads up against.
Yeah, it's really shocking, and especially when you think of all the benefits and advantages California have, and certainly when you look at so many folks who are doing well in California that right next door, I mean, you can go to some of the wealthiest areas in the Bay Area, for example, and not that many blocks away, you have an apartment where three, four families are living and fitting together. And the idea of we're going to talk about education in a minute, but the idea of going to school hungry and going to school without the basic supports it's pretty tough to learn in those situations.
A lot of these children have parents who are incarcerated. A lot of them, as I said before, are undocumented parents and so forth. And the undocumented parents didn't come out in Governor Newsom's statements or his report.
Yeah, well, it's a relatively small percent. I mean, the best estimate is about a little over 8% of California kids are undocumented. And, you know, as not to get too into the undocumented issue, but, you know, people come here to work. And so some of the folks who are in deep poverty, actually, many are working, many aren't. So it's a piece. But I would say in the broader scheme of things, it's a small piece of what we're talking about here.
The big piece, Caroline Danielson, comes down to how the money should be spent, doesn't it?
I think that's right. We do have a social safety net already, and that really does work. It just doesn't work enough. So we estimate, and this is numbers that we produce for the California Poverty Measure annually, and we do that in collaboration with the Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality. So that was the Stanford report that the assembly member mentioned. We estimate without the social safety net, child poverty would be about 35%, and with it, it's about 21%. So the social safety net really does work, and programs that really stand out there are the Earned Income Tax Credit, both state and federal, the CalFresh or our food stamp program, and the CalWORKS program. Those all really do work to reduce child poverty, but just not enough.
But what about, in addition to something like an earned tax credit, what about child care credit? What about education credit? I mean, there are lots of things that could be brought into this whole picture.
There are lots of things. And one helpful piece of the California Poverty Measure is it begins to incorporate sort of a more holistic picture of sort of resources that come from earnings, because most families with children do have at least some earnings, even when they're in poverty. Social safety net programs like the ones I mentioned, and incorporates cost of living differences across the state, because California is a high cost of living state, but it varies depending on whether you live in, say, the Bay Area or you live inland where cost of living is cheaper.
So where, let me go back to you on this, Ted Lember, where does the Fed fit into this as opposed to the state?
Well, the feds play an important role. And, you know, I think one of the issues that I think is really key to this report is where does when we talk about the feds also look nationally. And as was mentioned, we're very competitive in income supports. Where we're not competitive is education, and where we're not really as competitive need to be as early childhood. So the feds fit into that in part, certainly, by providing more support. Most of these programs that we're focusing on in the task force report, there's a federal element to it. And so as the feds cut back on those programs, obviously it exacerbates the issues here in California. But the other importance of looking nationally is, you know, getting to your earlier question about, you know, are there priorities within the holistic approach? You know, California is way behind on certain areas.
Well, it strikes me that maybe there ought to be some sense of priorities or triage here, shouldn't there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I served on the task force, and I definitely agree with the assembly member's point that it has to be holistic. Absolutely. As a whole child group, we couldn't agree more. That said, some of us on the task force said the first priority within the task force needs to be early childhood, because it's a double impact that if you get that child quality early child care, you're making it easier for the parent, usually the mom, to work, so addressing the poverty right away. But you're also giving that kid the support. So 20 years from now, we're not having this show on forum that you know, let's make sure we're looking at the long term too. Why is there poverty? Well, half the people in poverty, high school dropouts. Very few college graduates are in poverty. So the education piece of this is central, and California is doing really poorly when it comes to education funding.
And what about things? Let me go to things with you, Caroline Danielson, like cost of living, and not only cost of living, but minimum wage.
That's correct. So we have a minimum wage policy. Beginning in 2016, we began to increase our minimum wage, and it's set to become $15 an hour by 2022. And along with that, when we introduced a California's Earned Income Tax Credit, or the CalEITC, which was introduced in 2015 and has been expanded each year since, and the governor's budget does propose to expand it even further and to rename it, that was also pegged to give at least a small credit to those who are working the equivalent of a full-time minimum wage. So we're doing things along those lines to help. And I think some key questions are really...
Things but not enough would be...
Well, so are we aiming to reduce child poverty now or very soon? Or are we looking to two-generation strategies like education and child care to...
We talking about child poverty in general or deep child poverty?
I think both. When we talk about deep child poverty, I think the questions need to be not only work supports like the EITC, but also supports that aren't contingent on work, because those in deep poverty are often those who have lost a job or are for some reason not currently working, even though work is very common. You know, having gaps in the hours of work you have or your wages can lead to deep poverty.
Where do we separate those two, Ted Lambert?
Well, I think the task force did the right thing by focusing in on deep poverty as the main, because your question about, you know, paint a picture. When we look at the how kids are faring in the state, almost half are in what we would call low income families, meaning families of four that can't meet the basics. Then you have, you know, about 21% in poverty, and then the small percentage in deep poverty. So what the task force, I think, appropriately did is say, let's really hone in on those in the deepest poverty, because there's things we can do right away to try to address that, but then also recognize this is a much broader, bigger problem.
And also, you mentioned a couple times, both of you have mentioned the safety net. I mean, do we need a stronger safety net? Is that pretty clear in the vision?
Yeah, I think so. Again, you know, to be clear, I think the some members hit it right in saying we need to do a lot of things all at once. And so there's, I would argue within the report, there's things that are more important. That said, the social safety is absolutely key. And it's not just CalWORKs, but the EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit, child care credit. These things have been, you know, shown to have an immediate impact on alleviating deep poverty.
Need more revenue, and clearly need more insurance that revenue is well spent, and many other things that come into the picture here. I'm interested in finding out what listeners have to say about this. This is an ongoing serious problem, and in fact, California has the worst rate of poverty of any state in the nation. And as I've said, and I don't have to reiterate this, the numbers are shocking and appalling. Governor Newsom said moral outrage. How do you feel, and how do you think the needle should be moved, and what are the best ways really to ensure that the possibility of moving that needle can actually be brought to fruition? I want to give you a toll-free number, and you can join us now. We do want to hear from you. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Welcome your involvement in the program, so please feel free to join the conversation. Again, you can do that by calling in now, 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and join us that way, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And I'm wondering about the Jerry Brown task force. I mean, there was a lot laid out in that, Caroline. Let's talk about that just for a moment, because it was released last year and it talked about ways of alleviating child poverty. That version is what we're seeing now being pushed forward, or has that been codified more and expanded more?
Are you referring to the AB 1520 Reducing
yes.
Child Poverty Task Force?
Yes. The one we talked about with the Assemblywoman.
Right. Yeah. So I think there are a number of bills in process right now that have emerged from that task force report. It covered a number of areas, including child care and early education, foster care, special populations, income supports, and education. So there's a lot in that report, and I think a number of the bills are being there are a number of bills related to that poverty task force. I would like to also mention a very recent National Academy of Sciences report that came out of 2015 congressional request to produce a plan for reducing child poverty by half in the United States. And I think this is an important touchstone as well for the conversation in California.
Can you give us highlights from that?
Sure. So the task force report has, this National Academy of Sciences report has a couple of recommendations, and they range between about $90 billion to $110 billion total for the nation as a whole. And they focus on both expansions to the EITC and to the CalFresh program, or as it's known nationally, the SNAP program. But they also talk about pieces including better child support enforcement and child allowance, which is something that we haven't really talked about so far. And so a child allowance is a benefit that a lot of European countries have, and that is targeted to families who have children and isn't contingent on work, unlike the EITC.
You mentioned the EITC report. It was criticized, though. It did get a pretty round of criticism, in fact, by the LAO, for example. Yeah.
The EITC. Well, the EITC is a program that works. It incentivizes employment. It has additional health benefits for children, for parents. It has been shown to have some promising impacts on educational attainment. So it's a program that works.
Mention that's the Earned Income Tax Credit.
The Earned Income Tax Credit. It has gaps, though. So it excludes families where everyone does not file with a Social Security number. So even if you file taxes, but somebody lacks documentation status in your family, then the whole family is not eligible. So that's a gap. It excludes families who, for that year, don't have earnings. And that is a gap that can affect those in the deepest poverty. That doesn't mean they have no earnings forever, but in a particular tax year, they may not. And so those are two important gaps that a child allowance can fix.
And I also mentioned earlier, and Ted said it's only about 8%, but undocumented families are not necessarily included in that. Ted, let me get back to you just on a broad question. There's always seems to be a division between so many of these reports and what are short-term solutions or ways to go as opposed to long-term. You kind of alluded to that before, yeah?
Yes. Well, going back to the theme of we've got to look at this holistically, we really, really have to do both because there's deep pain going on right now. I mean, we've talked about that, and it's really intolerable in this state, and there are things we can do right now. That said—
Such as?
Well, some of the income supports, I think childcare is actually a twofer, meaning it's what I love about the childcare piece, it's really a short-term and long-term impact. But we do also need to address this longer term because, you know, we've been grappling with poverty as a country for a while now, and as a state, it's really reaching, you know, unacceptable levels. And so let's look short-term, but also there are ways we can get out of this longer-term, and we need to do both. And I think the task force really tried to do that.
Let me bring a caller aboard here. Jessica, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I love your show. I get so much information from you guys. But I just wanted to raise a comment because I am in that poverty level. And I think a lot of that could be dealt with is transportation. Because transportation, you will have to travel so far out, and there's not a lot of public transportation to get you to and from where the good jobs are. Right now, I live in Stockton, and I have to travel all the way to Fremont to get to work, which is wear and tear on my car, and which causes more money issues and things like that. Those problems are, the programs are good because I did have those programs before I got my job. But transportation, I think, is a big issue, in my opinion.
Jessica, thank you for your love of the program, and thank you for raising the question. And Ted, nodding your head vigorously, I mean, transportation is a big part of this whole holistic thing.
It absolutely is, and really sympathize with the caller. And it's a huge piece of being able to get to work and get a job. And in addition, when you're talking about kids, it's also part of getting kids the supports they need, right? How does a parent who's working get their kid to those supports, to that child care, to that health? So the transportation is a huge piece of this, both in terms of being able to get a job and also, you know, how do you have access to these different supports?
You want to add something here, Caroline Danielson?
Yeah. So I think implicitly here, part of the issue the caller raised, a very good one, the long commute has to do with high housing costs. So she might live in Fremont if she could afford to live in Fremont. So it is transportation. It is also potentially housing. And if we had more affordable housing in places where people, where the jobs are and people want to live, then some of those transportation costs could be alleviated.
Good point. And we will talk about more points as we continue to address the problem of child poverty. Governor Newsom has laid out a tax credit and is also expanding public assistance. And we do want to hear from you. And you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We'll return. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about child poverty in this hour of Forum. Governor Newsom has indicated that he wants a tax credit, and he also wants to expand public assistance. We spoke earlier with Assemblywoman Autumn Burke, who actually chairs the Assembly Committee on Revenue and Taxation, and in studio with us, Ted Lempert, who's president of Children Now, a national research and advocacy organization based in Oakland, and Caroline Danielson, who is senior research fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California and co-author of the yearly California Poverty Measure Report. Speaking about annual reports, Caroline, let me ask you about this, Ted. The recently released state audit found that millions of children who were enrolled in Medi-Cal aren't getting basic preventative health checkups that are required.
Yes, and this gets to we need to be prioritizing kids in this state, and that sounds like a throwaway line, but one of the things we're thrilled with this new governor and his administration is I think they understand that we're not prioritizing kids. So, you know, half the kids in this state are on Medi-Cal. It's a huge chunk of the Medi-Cal population, but a relatively small percentage of the Medi-Cal dollars go to kids. And the healthcare is a piece that's highlighted in this report. Obviously, basic health and being healthy is key to being out of poverty as well. And one of the things among the things we're thrilled with Governor Newsom's focus is his folks, and he has a lot of pediatricians, child health experts in his administration, are saying, wait a second, Medi-Cal has not been prioritizing kids, and we need to shift that. And the advantage there is some of that's existing money, and let's make sure kids are prioritized.
Yeah, but how else do we shift that, Caroline Danielson?
I think leveraging the dollars that we do get from the federal government in order to make better use of them. So we have a federal match for Medi-Cal dollars. So paying attention to that, we can better serve children and have that our dollars matched by the federal government. And I would just bring in other programs. CalFresh, we have a relatively low participation among families who are eligible. It's been increasing. We've been doing good work to improve our participation. But those are also federal dollars that the state can draw down in the counties and go to local economies by improving how many children and how many families who are eligible actually get access to those federal benefits in the end, mainly.
We do know that poverty has more impact on those with younger children, don't we, Caroline?
I think that's right. I think the research evidence shows that being in poverty for long periods of time while you're a child or being in poverty early in your childhood has especially detrimental effects.
And more immigrants with children, not necessarily undocumented immigrants, have more problems with poverty, and more ethnic and racial families have more problems with poverty. I mean, these are things that we know that we can really head off in whatever way is available to us. But, you know, it strikes me is that I don't think we're talking about solutions to poverty. I don't know if we really have a consensus, even when I hear a word holistic. I don't know. That throws a kind of curveball at me in some ways, because there are plenty of people who say, again, we have to triage. We have to prioritize.
We policymakers do need to prioritize listening to voices, stakeholders from around the state. I think the solutions differ based on, in part, where you are in the state. So coastal counties are especially expensive to live. For example, inland counties may face challenges in finding a job. And so the solutions to addressing poverty in different parts of the state are different. And as you mentioned, there's also disparities across racial ethnic groups by immigration status. And those are, so it's there's no one-size-fits-all solution. I do think priorities are important.
Here's David, who writes, this speaks to our problems as a nation. We have all the money in the world for wars and corporate welfare, yet children go hungry. Such a disaster. Gary says, when you have the fifth largest economy in the world but have a poverty rate akin to Louisiana, who is benefiting from this crisis? That's an interesting question. Either of you want to address that?
Well, without getting a whole other conversation going, I just go back to the point that kids are not prioritized. And you look at just how I hear the point about corporations and other. The other point is just within the public sector, we're not prioritizing these programs and these kids. So, you know, who of our public sector employees, people that work with children, childcare, preschool workers make far less than the typical public employee. So, you know, we're putting a lot more into corrections, law enforcement, other areas of government than we are into these places that could alleviate poverty.
And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me go next to you. Mike, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking my call. Great you guys are talking about this. I really appreciate it because I'm in the trade. I'm a cabinet maker, but I have contractors that I work with that are in the tile business and everything else. And we cannot find people to hire, whether they're educated, not educated. There's just no one out there. Why is it that California has taken away all these teach these trades, even in high school at low level, like elementary or middle school? And what can we do to voice our opinion to bring all that back?
That's a good question, Mike. And Ted Lumbert nodding his head. Ted?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, I we could talk for a long time about education, but I think the key is like every child being able to reach their full potential. And that means every kid being offered an education to allow them what they want to do. And if that means going to college or going to grad school, great, period. That said, that doesn't mean we can't also say that we also have classes that for a kid that says, no, I, you know, want to go into the trades, that we have those kinds of classes available in high school. And then the community college system, we don't give enough focus on. And that's a, you know, great opportunity for young people that want those skills to get them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Mike, want to respond to it?
Yeah,
Yeah, that, I mean, some people decide they don't want to finish college. Some people, or not college, I'm sorry, high school, but some people don't have the option because, like you said, their poverty level is so low, they have to work to help the family out. I was fortunate enough to finish high school. I didn't want to go to college. I got into the trades and ended up starting my own business. So I was fortunate, but I would like to see other people have that opportunity as well.
Yeah, it's good of you to think that way, and thank you so much for the call, Mike. Good to hear from you, too. Here's another listener we're going to hear from. Gwen, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. I don't know if people know it, but California has children's centers, at least in the Bay Area, and they're open from like 7 to 6, and they go from like 3-year-olds to 9, and they get breakfast. The kids get breakfast. They used to get a snack, but Reagan cut that out, and they get a lunch. So I really was fascinated about that. I worked in the ones in Oakland and San Francisco, and my favorite one in San Francisco is Los Americas. They have a community garden and everything. Also, I want to make a comment on the trades. I taught computers for a while, and my room used to be the home ec room. And they cut out, you know, wood shop, home ec, and all that in middle school. And now they've cut out computers, which we're right next to Silicon Valley. I think they brought in a library person, wiped my job out for a library person. So that's my comment.
Well, thank you, Gwen, for those comments. And do we know about the child centers, either of you?
I'd say that we have wonderful early childhood programs. We have Head Start. We have State Preschool. We have other programs that are wonderful. We have school programs for school-age children as well. The point is that they're rationed, that not all children who are eligible for those programs can get access to them. We don't have enough slots, federally or state-funded. And so it's not that we don't have high-quality programs, that we don't have enough of them.
Here's a listener who writes, the real moral outrage is that caused by the governor and his political cronies in D.C. You want to actually solve social problems like poverty, reduce immigration, and allow us to focus our attention on improving the lives of citizens here. Is there a correlation between states with high levels of immigration and high levels of childhood poverty, either of you?
I'm not sure the exact stats, but I would push back on that comment that, you know, right now the problem is not too many kids in this state. The problem is making sure that every kid in this state is well educated and supported. And part of the strength of our economy actually is immigration. So, you know, I get concerned when that's viewed as immigration is brought in as, quote, part of the problem, when the problem is we need to make sure that every kid who is in this state is well-educated and has the support, because we're going to need each of them to support the rest of us when we retire.
There's a tweet from a listener named Nick who says, what about safe potable water? How many Californians don't have it? Do we know? I mean, in rural districts, it's been a problem, to some remote rural districts mainly. But
I think that's correct, that the number of families that don't have access to safe potable water is fairly small. But for those families, it's a big problem. So it's a solution that needs a targeted answer.
Here's Naheed. Naheed, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling from Fremont, and I work in mental health in Fremont. I'm a clinician trainee. I have a comment followed by a question. My comment is that I see the effects of poverty on mental health in these children. It is severe. I see a lot of anxiety and depression in my patients/clients. And I live in Fremont. I live close to Tesla. And I see that people drive hours and hours to get to work. And so I don't know if they will even get a time to spend with their families and with their children, because they come from the desk to all the way to Fremont in traffic. So it's basically a correlation, a circle of different issues that are all caused by poverty. And my question is, again, we are the fifth largest economy in the world. What are these millionaires? And we produce a lot of millionaires here, especially in the Bay Area. What is their responsibility? What is these corporations' responsibilities when it comes to poverty, when it comes to housing issues.
I don't know. I thank you, Nahid, for the questions you're raising. I don't know if either Ted or Caroline want to weigh in on responsibilities of millionaires. That's almost a category unto itself. But I'd like you to maybe talk about what she initially, and feel free to talk about that, but what she initially brought up, which is the impact on mental health. I mean, poverty is extraordinary impact on mental health.
Yeah, and to give another nod to this new administration, our new Surgeon General Nadine Bourke-Harris has talked a lot about how the trauma that kids face, and that involves a lot of issues, but certainly, you know, poverty, loss, jobs is among those, has a huge impact on a kid's health. And, you know, one of the things we talked about at the task force report on the task force was access to services. So going back to where is California behind other states, we have the fewest number of school nurses, school counselors. So these kids who are facing, you know, basic mental health issues, Children Now did a report card where 2/3 of kids who said they were experiencing a mental health issue did not have an adult to go to. California ranks last in that. So these are the kinds of issues where we need to look nationally and say we've got to do a lot of things. But one thing in particular we should do is, where's California really falling behind other states? Because clearly our poverty rate is behind other states.
Do either of you want to say anything about the income gap in the state and the millionaires and their responsibility in this?
Well, we do have inequality in the state. That's for sure. On the side of where our millionaires playing a role, we do also have a progressive tax rate, and we tax capital gains at the rate of income. So those things do help our budget which goes to education, it goes to health and human services, goes to other areas that can serve all Californians.
And again, Caroline Danielson is Senior Research Fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California. And Andy writes, change public policy incentives to create housing where jobs are. This will relieve housing costs, commute costs, and give parents more time with their families. And he's absolutely right, I think, Caroline, isn't he?
I think that's right. We face a housing shortage in the state that's been decades in the making. There's estimates range between about 2 to 3.5 million housing units short. And most of those housing units are located in the coastal counties, the Bay Area and Southern California, where most of the population lives and where many of the jobs are. And that's a big deficit in our housing market. And that means that we need solutions that can increase our housing supply and maintain affordable housing.
Here's Brad. Brad, thank you for waiting. You're on the air on Forum. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. This is Brad Berman. I'm a developmental pediatrician in the Bay Area. And first, thank you for this show, and I so appreciate the work of both Children Now and PPIC. To expand the conversation a bit further is the relationship, well documented in research, with poverty and children with developmental disabilities. And I wonder if your guests could comment a little bit about their focus and messages for the governor, if we look at California, in terms of the disproportionate rate of children with disabilities in poverty and the inequities with access to resources, including early childhood intervention and early childhood education. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We'll go first to you, Caroline Danielson.
So this is not a full answer, but let me go back to the question of adequate income, because there is good research evidence to show that income deficits produce long-term issues for children as they age and as they have reduced educational success, reduced employment, increased health difficulties. And so I do think that prenatally, in children's lives, that simply having adequate and stable income will be protective against concerns like developmental disabilities. That's not the only solution needed, but it is, when you get right down to it, just having more income helps improve many outcomes.
Well, it helps with just about everything. But Ted Lempert, developmental disabilities from your perspective?
Yeah, I really appreciate the caller's comments. And if there's a theme that comes out of this task force report, and certainly the new governor is highlighting, is you've got to start early. And I think, again, going back to how we're prioritizing, when we look at our healthcare system, there's a lot of people with a lot of needs, but kids are, quote, cheaper, and there's a relatively smaller number that have extra healthcare needs. We can do this. if we made kids the top priority, we're not talking massive amounts of dollars to make sure every kid gets the early support they need, both to identify, to screen, and identify their health needs. And we're not doing that in this state, and we don't do that good a job at it as a country. And we keep just putting the dollars later, as opposed to saying, let's put a not that much more dollars earlier, but that could so address some of these problems. And that might sound simple, but it's really something we're just not doing as a state.
And Ted Lempert again is president of Children. Now, what do you say to the argument, you must hear it from time to time, well, we have children are an important priority. Children in poverty is an outrage, but we have other priorities. We have to save the planet, for example. We have to work on revenue for climate change and environmental purposes and so forth. Where do we make that balance?
Well, I hear that all the time from policymakers. One of my biggest frustrations in this job is, like, you know, we're trying to make sure kids are the priority, and there's sort of this assumption that they are. They're not. And policymakers always say, well, we got all these other issues. And you know what I tell them? Well, guess what? We're actually doing better on those issues. Are we doing well enough? No. Do we have a lot of work to do? Yes. But California, you know, holds itself out as the progressive state, the comparison to Washington, D.C., the state that people should look at for, you know, the kind of governance that we need. And on many issues, that's true. When it comes to kids, it's not. And so kids really are not the priority. And so I would push back and say, yes, there's a lot of priorities, but let's actually make kids the first priority, and that will address a number of these issues.
Here's a listener, Nicole, who writes, I'm a social worker who has worked with mostly below-poverty-level families who receive CalWORKs. I see the savings limit of $2,000, not to mention benefits being discontinued within a month of beginning to earn over the identified income limit, as prohibitive of getting out of poverty. Thoughts, Caroline?
So CalWORKs is a program begun in 1998 with a focus on helping families to become self-sufficient through employment. And the aim of the program is time-limited benefits for adults, continuing benefits for children, even if adults fail to stay current with program requirements. So we have a relatively secure CalWORKs program. It's much smaller than it was 20 years ago before the CalWORKs program started, but it's still, relative to other states, a large program. For some families, this really works. The CalWORKs is a stopgap. It fills in the gap before you get a job or in between jobs and helps launch you into self-sufficiency. But for other families, it's not enough. And
I think that's what the caller is implying. Yeah. It's a boomerang effect. You know, suddenly you get a job. And what about all these people who have jobs who are poor? I mean, there are a lot of them, working families and so forth, who fall into the category, at least in terms of income poverty.
That's correct. Most families in poverty in California, including those with children, have at least some earnings. Sometimes the problem is they don't have enough hours of work or their wages are too low. But combining work with safety net programs is the typical portrait of a family in poverty in California.
And we'll bring some more of our callers aboard here. Let me go to another caller in the city. Donna, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Donna. Go ahead.
I guess the thing that I'm wondering about, in terms of a functional society, we really are in a crisis point of resources. Although some people would say, well, you know, like I just paid taxes and I paid $1,680 this year and last year I got money back. So I'm paying for that big tax break that the wealthy people got. But I have to respond, on the other hand, to the woman who was saying, well, where are the millionaires' responsibility? I have to say, where are the people who are deciding to have more than one child or more than two children? Where is the responsibility for parental decision-making on how many children to have if poverty looks like it's going to be a factor in your life? I know that there, for instance, I know for a fact that HUD has a generational, and this is a big secret, but they have a generational program where, let's just say, some grandparent, you know, really qualifies for HUD assistance. Well, that continues on to the child and to the grandchild. Where, you know, the liberals talk about, or the conservatives talk about a nanny state. And I love Gavin Newsom. I voted for him. I'm so thrilled that his point of view is really leading California. But to keep talking about what children need, and because it's all true, but to not say, hello, we have to work as a community and take responsibility for not having these people that I became aware of. They're on HUD and they have 12 kids.
Donna, so, I'm glad you brought up family planning, because I think it is a big part of the whole picture of child poverty. And I just know denying that. Is there, Ted Lumbert?
Well, I appreciate the caller's comments, and I hear all that. The facts are the birth rate's been declining pretty significantly. And so, you know, we're in a different world than 20, 30 years ago. And when you look at the projections, as I referenced earlier, yes, parental responsibility is key. And although lots of parents are doing everything they can and need support, although the issue today we face in California is not too many kids. The problem we have in California is making sure every kid has the support to replace the workers who will be retiring.
And let me thank you for the call, Donna. And have we really talked about how Governor Newsom's plan is going to be paid for? Can we go into that to some extent, Caroline?
Sure. I think that the plan so far is one that relies on state funds that are in our coffers because our economy is doing quite well. I don't believe the plan is as ambitious as, say, reducing child poverty by half in 10 years or eliminating deep child poverty. Those are things that the National Academy of Sciences report I referenced mentioned or has as a goal, and the Reducing Child Poverty Task Force report has focused on deep child poverty. So the solutions proposed are not, as I understand it, a way of paying for all the reductions, which according to National Academy of Sciences in California and their plans could be in the $10 to $15 billion a year range.
Let me go to another caller, and that's a caller from Los Angeles. Conway, you're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Conway Collis. Good to be on with Ted and Carolyn. I was state co-chair of the Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force, and I just want to emphasize the importance of the targeted child tax credit, which, unlike the earned income tax credit or the CalWORKs expansion, is the one thing that immediately addresses the 450,000 children in California in deep child poverty. Just to put that in context, 450,000 children in one place would be the eighth largest city in California, bigger than Oakland, for example. So it's absolutely crucial for both short and long-term reasons that we address these children. And we can literally, by implementing the targeted child tax credit, eliminate deep child poverty in California within 4 years. This is something that's doable. It's a political decision. The governor has been magnificent on these issues. His initial proposal addresses shallow child poverty, which is really what EITC and CalWORKs do, not deep child poverty, to address these children, because this is a child poverty tax credit that's directed to children, and to these are people that are in and out of homelessness. There's housing instability, food instability, child care instability. It will address all of those, and it takes into account the cost of living in the different counties in California, which, of course, differ widely. And so it's simply applied by looking at the individual families' sources of income, public and private, looking at what half of the poverty rate, the poverty level is in that particular county, and making sure that that family has risen to at least above the subsistence level, above deep child poverty, which on the average in the state, the average deep child poverty rate is $12,500 a year for a family of four. Obviously, that's too little to live on, and this allows the child to go to school, to not have housing insecurity, to take advantage of educational opportunities, and it allows the parent or guardian to work.
Conway, I appreciate your call. I'm also struck by what you're saying about this being viable and there being the political will.
It is viable, and the task force provided a way to ramp it up over time. It starts with just children 0 to 3. The first year would be $290 million. The second year would be just over $400 million. It can be paid for within the current within the current surplus, and it pays for itself many times over long term.
Well, I hope your optimism is indeed fulfilled, and I thank you for that call. And I thank our guest, Ted Lempert. Always good to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Ted Lempert is president of Children Now. They're a national research and advocacy organization based in Oakland. And thank you, Caroline Danielson. Good to have you with us this hour as well.
Thanks very much.
Caroline is senior research fellow with the PPIC, the Public Policy Institute of California, and co-author of the yearly California Poverty Measure Report. And I want to encourage listeners to continue this discussion online by going to our online website, kqed.org/forum. Before we end here, I want to read a few more comments that are coming in. Elena writes, I want to chime in about how those of us who earn good wages are supporting the poor. We support them with our taxes. We pay almost 50% of our income in taxes between state and federal. We also make donations to our public schools to ensure they have enough money to support teachers. And Joe writes, holistically, the elephant in the room may be that small family size is a neglected vital issue for public discussion. And finally, a comment by Keith. We have this level of poverty for a reason. I lived in Salinas. I know how well we hide our poverty while feigning deep concern. Well, I hope this concern will turn into not only political will, but viability. Again, I thank our guests and thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. I'm going to be taking some time off. Katie Orr will be filling in tomorrow. And thank you for being a part of this morning's program. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.